It's easy to get stuck in a recipe rut. You know, a few dishes that you know by heart, you've learned to stock your cupboard with the fixings for pizza or casserole or Taco Tuesdays. But it's spring now, and it's time to shed your winter cans and carbs and get back to eating fresh, seasonal ingredients. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll be joined by an area chef and a local food writer who will share a few spring recipes that'll put a little pep in your prep. Such recipes include a dandelion salad with shrimp and warm bacon vinaigrette. Yep, that's dandelion, like the flower, like what you've been plucking on any given spring weekend. Plus, later in the hour, we'll send in a clown. Literally. He'll share new trends in clowning and tips for not making children cry. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. More sunshine, more rain, bright flowers, greener trees and shrubs, and of course, more picnics and outdoor cookouts. Those are the things of spring. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. Today we discuss spring recipes as well as new beginnings with our guest, Beth Bader, author of the Cleaner Plate Club, and Shanita McAfee, a caterer and executive chef at Magnolia's, which is set to open soon here in Kansas City. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
What's unique about food preparation in the springtime, Beth?
Well, I think it's amazing because finally you can get fresh vegetables at a lot of places. If you're lucky enough to live in Southern California, you can get that year-round. You don't really appreciate it. But now, after going without for months, the amount of fresh greens and fresh foods, it's so much appreciated and you look forward to it. It's just awesome.
Shanita, what recipes tend to prevail this time of year? What types of recipes?
Anything involving fresh ingredients, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables. And you find people, because we've been, you know, closed up all winter, we're eating lighter. So people are starting to go more light pastas, getting rid of the heavy sauces, you know, salads, fish, because we've been eating stew and chili and, you know, roast, macaroni and cheese all winter long.
I always think that the abundance of spring greens and the fact that lettuce comes in season first is nature's way of reminding me I have to fit in a swimsuit in a few months.
Exactly.
You go pumpkin crazy during the fall, however.
I do.
Do you have to go herb or vegetable crazy for the springtime?
I am herb crazy in the springtime. We have like 20, 30 pots outside our house with all the herbs, partly because I have black thumbs and herbs are the only thing I can successfully grow. And also because the squirrels don't eat the herbs.
What herbs make you local?
I always grow rosemary and sage, and then basil and everything. Hyssop. Sorrel is a perennial. That one's so easy to grow. It just comes back every year.
Shanita, what's your favorite thing about spring versus other seasons? You mentioned the lighter fare, but as far as preparation goes,
it's easier. When you're in the springtime, we want to be outside. We want to be on the go. You're not, you know, you don't want to be in the house. You don't want your kitchen all hot. So the springtime meals usually take, you know, I hate to use this cliche term, 30 minutes or less. But that's usually about how long it takes. And then we can get outside. You can eat outside, picnics. That's what I love about spring.
That's not a call to Domino's, but that's a preparation of actual food.
Yeah, it's a preparation of actual food for 30 minutes.
Kansas City, what's your favorite spring recipe? Share it with us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard@kcur.org to get tips on preparation from our guest today. Now, both of you by chance, Beth and Shanita, happen to have asparagus recipes. Why is asparagus the guest of honor during spring?
I love asparagus, first of all. And secondly, it's in season right now, right in spring. So that's when it's at its freshest. That's when it's at its peak. And it just tastes good.
Yeah. Between April and May, we have such a limited season. So we just eat a ton of asparagus. We tend to eat just tons of things right when they're in season and then move on to the next thing. So it makes you be creative. With that ingredient, you have to prepare it every different way possible so you don't get tired of it.
Well, we're going to get into the different ways asparagus is prepared. It's not going to be an asparagus show, but let's begin because you both have a common thread with asparagus. So, Beth, what is one of your asparagus recipes? A potato salad.
Right. The salad recipe came about because you walk down the farmer's market stall and you see what's fresh, and it's lettuces. You'll get potatoes this time of year. You get the asparagus. The mint is in season. I love mint. And then we've got the, for fruit, we don't really have anything here until rhubarb comes in and berries in late May. So I needed to use the fruit that was in season, which is citrus, the very last bit of winter citrus. So that kind of paired the lemon and the mint and the asparagus pair really well together. And it has a fresh, bright flavor. So that's kind of how that came about.
Now, your potato salad is an actual salad. It's not the clumpy yellow right. concoction that comes in a container from right. the store. It's not tata salad.
Right.
It's actual potato salad. Tell us about the blue potatoes that you use.
It's more like a niçoise where you have the boiled and chilled potatoes in it. Now, blue potatoes are my favorite. They're a little hard to find. You won't find them in the grocery store very often. They are an heirloom variety. So we think of potatoes, we think russet, we think new potatoes, and that's about it. That's because that's all we see at the grocery store. But there's actually about 400 different varieties of potatoes. And the blue ones are an Inca variety, and they all kind of date back to be an heirloom. You have to date back at least 50 years. So these are all ancient varieties that we just haven't seen, but a lot of the local farmers are growing them, and they taste wonderful.
Shanita, tell us about one of your asparagus recipes. It begins with asparagus and peas, and I won't give the rest away.
So I was trying to make it sound fancy on here, but it's really more of like a leftover pasta. So I had some ham. We got some frozen peas, we had some asparagus, and I love Parmesan cheese. I would eat it out of the container with nothing else. So you just kind of put it all together over some pasta, and there you have it.
Now, does that come cold or warm, or
it's
can
warm.
You do both?
It's warm. It wouldn't taste good cold because the cream and the cheese don't really translate well once you cool it back down, but it's a warm pasta.
Now, do you prepare the pasta first and then dump everything in, or do you
mm-hmm.
put everything in a pot?
You prepare the pasta first, and then you go ahead and you got to cook your asparagus because it's raw, unless you have leftover asparagus. I was trying to keep the recipe simple for the viewers. So if you have leftover asparagus, you can omit the cooking asparagus step from the recipe.
816-235-2888 if you want to share your spring recipes with our guest today here on Central Standard. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. You can also email in your recipes at centralstandard@kcur.org. I'm going to ask an esoteric question here. When it comes to spring veggies, how often do you grill versus broil, and why?
The only reason I'm broiling is because I'm out of propane or don't have any charcoal.
Or it's raining.
No, I'll go out there in the rain. The only reason I'm broiling is because we don't have any propane or there's no charcoal. That's it.
What about you, Beth?
My husband does all the grilling, and he loves to do it, so it gives him his space in the kitchen, which is really important because he's very creative and he likes to do those things. So we grill a lot. I love grilled vegetables, and as soon as we can start grilling, in the winter, he'll even dig a path out to the grill to go grill sometimes.
Now, Shatina talks about running out of propane as a necessity to grill vegetables, but how often do these recipes sort of come out of necessity or come by accident?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people they find the recipe first, or they see a recipe in the newspaper, and they just decide that they want to make that. Then they go to the grocery store and they buy those ingredients. The farmer's market and eating that seasonal food kind of switches things over to where you go shop first, and then you see what's in season, and then you kind of decide what to make. And it's hard to make that jump. But once you do, it's really worth a lot, and it brings so much more flavor and spontaneity to your dishes, and you just prepare what's fresh and what's there, and it has a good, rich experience.
And to piggyback off that, it becomes fun. Mm-hmm. When you shop and cook that way, you know, I have kids. I can get them involved in the process because now we're on Kitchen Impossible, or this is our own, you know, Chopped episode. This is what we have. What are we making? You know, and then they take ownership of it. And when they were younger, it was a good way for me to sneak in things that I wanted them to eat, because now they're involved in the process. They helped me pick it out. So, of course, they're going to try it.
Do you have a lit fuse, and do you have the theme music for Kitchen Impossible?
Sometimes we do.
You have a deadline?
Absolutely. We might set the timer, and we're like, you're in charge of the carrots. You're in charge, you know, go.
Beth, that's the main theme of Cleaner Plate Club. sneaking in the healthy ingredients for the kids and getting the kids involved in being invested in the process. Talk a little bit about that.
No sneaking, though.
No
you
sneaking.
Don't sneak.
No
yeah,
sneaking.
No sneaking. But it is investing them in the process and getting them started and engaged with food. A lot of times your food struggles come by the time you set down the food. They haven't had any choice in it, but kids want control. It's part of growing up. It's part of breaking away. If you wait till you hit the table, then the only control they have is, I'm not going to eat that. So it's let's take it away from the table. Let's have fun. Let's make the relationship building with food a positive one. And that way, when you get to the table, it's just enjoyment and less struggle, and it's not the battle that most parents can experience.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. We're talking spring recipes. Kansas City, what are your favorite spring recipes? Share it with us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard.org to get tips on preparation from our guests. Our guests are Beth Bader, author of the Cleaner Plate Club, and Shanita McAfee, a caterer and executive chef at Magnolia's, which is set to open soon here in Midtown Kansas City. Speaking of which, Shanita, you're opening up a restaurant. Tell us about Magnolia's.
Magnolia's is a contemporary Southern restaurant, which, you know, whenever I say that, people are like, what? What is that? What is contemporary Southern? I mean, the easiest way to explain it is it's taking everything that I grew up with and everything that I love in terms of eating, everything that your grandmother teaches you, your great-grandmother, and then everything that I learned in school and kind of throwing it all together. And it's a way of approaching traditional Southern ingredients or Southern fare and putting a different remix on it. So I'm basically just kind of remixing and adding some, you know, different influences to that type of cuisine.
Now, it's not soul food. It's Southern cuisine. So
it's
tell us about
Southern
cuisine. Tell us about the distinction.
Well, I think soul food is more, it's kind of like slang. It kind of gives you a negative connotation. When you think soul food, you think fried chicken, macaroni and cheese. Right. You think, oh gosh, I'm going to die. That's what's going to happen to me. But when you start to do the research and you think about Southern cuisine and the lifestyle, it's very much what's happening in food now. Eating what's in season, fresh vegetables. You know, grandma was not cooking with Velveeta shells and cheese. She just wasn't. That's not what they did. They made things from scratch. They made things fresh. You know, they grew what they ate. They canned, they preserved. So that's Southern cuisine.
So give us an example of one of your remixes.
It's sweet potato ravioli.
Sweet potato ravioli.
Yeah. So I have a nickname through the food community. It's the sweet potato princess. I do all kinds of things with sweet potatoes that people don't even imagine, from sweet potato sorbet to sweet potato cake to the sweet potato ravioli. Now, obviously, ravioli is not a Southern thing. That's an Italian thing. But you take the sweet potato and you add it to the ravioli mix and you make the dough yourself. And then I finish it with a sherry cream sauce, some roasted chicken, and then sauteed mustard, greens, and onions.
When did you first discover you had a knack for cooking? And Beth, I'll come to you with the same thing to reintroduce you to some of our listeners who may not have heard you before on Central Standard. So Shanita, when did you find out?
I'm the oldest of four, so cooking was a chore. And my siblings can tell you, those first few years of dinner was rough. So then it just, the chore became a passion. And then, you know, we got cable, and I realized that that's when the first edition of Food Network came out. That's when they actually cooked on the show. And then I realized, oh, there's a career in this. You can learn. And then it just kind of went from there.
What about you, Beth? When did it start for you?
Well, we had to cook for the family when we were young. Both my folks worked off farm, and there wasn't any fast food nearby. You know, the nearest grocery store was about 30 minutes away. So we had to always cook family dinner. There would be a recipe on the counter when we came home. So at age 10, I started cooking. And then we would do things like sourcing our eggs nearby, go into the different orchards, getting, you know, fresh food. So it just became an evolution. And then as I got older and cooking for myself, I wanted real food. I wanted things that tasted good. And then it was like, one day, I'm going to go to culinary school. And then it just kept going. And food became so much a part of my life.
And sort of life is your culinary school as well.
It's taken over. One day I'll finish culinary school. I'm a culinary school dropout. I got pregnant, had to drop out of school at 37. But I will finish.
Shanita, what differences do you see in, you're going through that transition right now, catering versus having a stationary restaurant, preparation-wise, recipe-wise?
I think it's the one thing that I don't like about catering is there's not a lot of variety. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, you got to publish your menus. This is what we make. And then you find that there's like a running thing. People want to pick the same 5 to 7 items every time. So after a while, you just get tired of making that. And when we started the catering business, you know, it was like we wrote a custom menu for every single job. Well, then that becomes a really tedious task. So now that we have the restaurant, it gives me the opportunity not to, I don't want to say experiment, but really experiment and to try out different recipes, try out different things. Then I'm able to work with local farmers and what's going on now. And I can change it up as frequently as I want to. Whereas catering, you're kind of just stuck in doing the same thing over and over and over and over.
So when you say experiment without experiment, you basically mean that you're going to be sampling ways of presentation and not necessarily experimenting.
Right. Like I pretty much know how it's going to turn out. I'm not like, I'm just going to put it out there and you guess tell me what it. No, we pretty much know how it's going to turn out. But by experimenting, we might be trying different cooking techniques, you know, adding different influences, you know, like if it's a traditional French or whatever dish, maybe I'm going to, you know, add some Chinese or whatever to it just to kind of change the flavors around.
Beth, Shanita's talking a lot about improvisation in recipes. How often mid-recipe do you look on a traditional recipe list and say, no, I think I'm gonna go out on a limb and put two more cups of cumin in just because I can?
Yeah. That's,
how often does that happen?
That's every time. I mean, recipes are a guide. They're not a rule in my house unless I'm writing a new recipe, and then I'm very exact in the way that I track the portions because someone else has to replicate it. But when it's time to just cook for myself, I might look at a cookbook and get inspiration, but then I put the cookbook away and then I go cook in the kitchen and I just start changing things. And I think maybe this would taste better. This is in season instead of that, and just switch it out. Or I like this taste better.
Shanita, how does cooking at home now differ from cooking for catering, cooking at the restaurant, and thinking food, food, food all the time?
Good thing my kids are at school. They're probably like, cooking at home, what? She does not cook at home. I'm mad that I have to walk by my kitchen when I get home. When I get home, I'm like, oh, Captain Crunch sounds good. I think that's what we're having for dinner. Once I leave, because I do it all day, 17, 18 hours a day of cooking, when I get home, I very rarely ever cook anything. But there are times when I've been conceptualizing something or thinking about something in my head, and then I'm like, okay, it's, you know, the wok. I see my wok. I got a new wok last year, and probably for a month, everything was stir-fried.
Now, do you serve, and I'll ask you the same question, Beth, do you serve what you like to eat, or do you serve what you like to make?
A little bit of both. Because some of the things that I like to make are not necessarily things that I like to eat. So it's a little bit of both. Because you have to make the customer happy, too.
What's an example of something that you don't necessarily like to eat, but you love to make preparation-wise?
I mean, this is a shameful thing to admit. I am a junk food junkie. So if it was up to me, we would have, you know, sweets and cake. And, you know, the whole entire menu would be filled with junk. And not any vegetables, no salad, no protein. No, come here and eat cake for breakfast.
What about you, Beth?
I'm with you on that. Like, I like to make desserts, but I know that, you know, I can't eat them all the time. So I'll make them and then we'll want to give them away, or I'll have my husband eat more of them. I don't like to keep a lot of that around the house because it kind of ruins my diet. And then what I like to eat is vegetables, but not everybody always agrees on those. So we'll have company over, and there might be 6 vegetable dishes out, and then you find out that they don't actually like vegetables. So that happens sometimes.
We're talking spring recipes and spring dishes and spring preparation with Beth Bader and Shanita McAfee. Beth is the author of The Cleaner Plate Club, and Shanita is a caterer and executive chef of Magnolias, which is set to open soon here in Kansas City. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Call in, share your spring recipes, or if you have something you're cooking up right now and you don't know quite how to go about it, we have some expert guests that could help give your food some zip. Let's get back to the recipes. Dandelion salad. What is the deal with that, Shanita?
I like dandelion greens. That's what Beth was kind of talking about. When you start to get into the culture of going to the farmer's market and seeing what is out there, you find that there are more lettuces than romaine, iceberg, and spring mix. There's like a whole realm of lettuces that are not at Walmart and Price Chopper. So
imagine that.
I know. It's a crazy phenomenon. And so dandelion greens, they have a bite to them that works really well with, well, bacon, obviously, because I like bacon.
Right, right.
So
tell us about that recipe, the dandelion salad.
I started experimenting maybe a year ago with warm salad dressings, and I started it with like spinach because it's a heartier green. And then I moved on to the dandelion or the summer greens, the microgreens, and I just found that it just works. It just tastes good. Bacon, mustard, honey, shrimp, cheese. I mean, could you get anything any better than that?
What else do you need in life, actually?
Exactly.
You can't go out and pick your own dandelion greens, right?
No. Unless you grew them. I wouldn't recommend it. Unless you grew them, don't go out and pick your own.
What makes dandelion greens unique versus collards or mustards?
Well, collards and mustards, collards are not, they're not good to eat raw like that. I mean, I do a collard and cabbage coleslaw, but you really have got to let the vinaigrette, so that the dressing on that has to be very acidy, so the acid will break down the greens. To eat collards in a salad is kind of, it's tough. It's chewy. So they're not, mustard greens you probably could, but they're bitter. So I've never tried them in a salad, but that's a good idea. I might need to do that.
So aside from prairies or the little dirt patches in front of curbs, no, where do you suggest shopping for dandelion greens?
Any of the local farmers markets. They all have them, just about all of them.
Beth, since we're talking spring recipes, what would spring be without the grill? You mentioned that your husband likes to grill vegetables. Let's talk about your flank steak recipe.
Okay. I don't love radishes, so we kept getting a lot of radishes all the time in the CSA box. We eat a few, but it's like, what do you do with these? And then finally, it's like, I've got to do something with this flavor of the radish. Maybe it would work well with other things that I do like. And you get the sharpness in there, kind of like a wasabi or a horseradish. So that's a natural pairing with beef. So what I did was just chop the radishes up, add the herbs, add the chili flakes, add the salt and the garlic, and made it into a radish chimichurri sauce. And that paired really well with the beef. So then I was able to use like 20 radishes at a time to make the sauce. And finally the CSA box got a little bit lighter. I was able to use some of those things. Still figuring out kohlrabi. That one's challenging, but the radishes I finally nailed with that. And I also like them later on in the summer. You'll still get some radishes. They go really well with as a garnish for a peach gazpacho with cucumber, and then put the radish on top of that. That's really good, too.
Now, do you marinate your steak with this radish sauce that you made up, or do you put it on after it comes off the grill?
After it comes off the grill, the marinade is real simple. You'll just use like garlic and red wine and oil and some Worcestershire and soy.
Beth, you also mentioned that you go herb crazy this time of year, just out of your mind for herbs, herbs being a big part of spring. You literally have a recipe with mushrooms and peas that ends in the words "for spring." Tell us about that dish and how it's prepared.
Well, mushrooms are this wonderful thing that we only get for such a limited time here. You'll see the morels on the farmer's market tables now, preferably the ones that have been verified as actual morel mushrooms. You'll see some of the ones that have been cultivated, and it's just such a little tiny window of time. And we got these beautiful mushrooms in the CSA box, and I had to do something with them immediately because I wanted to use them right away. We had asparagus on hand. We had some pancetta. And then the only herb that I had growing that early in spring really well was sorrel, because it's a perennial and it's always coming up. So it just kind of evolved into a sorrel pesto with the asparagus and the mushrooms and the pasta.
Now, is that cold or hot, or
it's
can you
warm.
Serve it both?
It's a warm dish.
Are spring recipes made to be eaten one-off, or are they made to be leftovers for other spring days? How do you approach that in terms of preparation?
I don't like leftovers, so I'm not a big leftover person. Because most of the time, I'm more of a texture and integrity, and a lot of recipes lose their integrity when it's reheated and prepared again. So I really try to cook it the day of, because you just kind of get the freshness of it at that moment.
Speaking of texture and integrity and freshness of the moment and mixing your love of junk food with your love of fine culinary delights, two words, potato chips.
Oh, these always get me in trouble.
They do.
We make sweet potato chips, and now we make purple potato chips. And then we put them with a bacon dip, and people just kind of go crazy over them.
Now, without giving away too many trade secrets, how are they prepared?
Well, the thing with sweet potatoes, one, is I've cooked them in all different types of utensils and oils and pots and whatever. They cook best in peanut oil in a cast iron pot. The cast iron pot really kind of regulates the heat, and it's like a low and slow kind of thing. So they're thinly sliced, and they're able to get crispy because they also continue to cook a little while longer after you take them out of the oil, so they'll be black and burnt. That sugar in the sweet potatoes turns burnt quickly. And then the purple potatoes was kind of a fluke. I had a whole bunch of purple potatoes left over, and I was like, I wonder if I can make chips out of these too. I just sliced them up, and we made them, and they're actually pretty tasty.
Beth, do you have anything that makes a light snack? You just mentioned purple potatoes and sweet potatoes for natural chips.
We do kale chips a lot this time of year. I love them. They're light, they're crisp, they're crunchy, and kids can actually get their head around a green when it's crisp and light with salt on them. It's kind of the gateway drug to getting them into eating more greens, which I love.
So are there different characteristics, Beth, of a spring breakfast versus a spring lunch versus a spring dinner, and how do you approach that?
You just apply the same ideas behind breakfast, right? Lunch is salads in the spring. I mean, that's just that light salad. And then breakfast, I love eggs. This time of year, we're starting to get a lot of really good farm eggs. The chickens are getting out in the grass a little more. The eggs are deep orange. They taste so good. You know, mix some fresh herbs with that, make a panini. You know, it's so easy. Green Dirt Farm is starting to sell their sheep's milk cheese again.
Mm-hmm.
All the baby lambs are being born, so it's time to get the milk. And, you know, just getting out and taking those ingredients and going, okay, egg sandwich, a little panini, scrambled eggs in there, fresh cheese, fresh herbs. That makes a great breakfast. And then same thing again at lunch. It's like now we mix in greens and vegetables. And
Shanita, do you have the same approach, or do you get more discriminating the later the day goes?
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm at work, it's usually like, oh, darn it, I haven't eaten. What is there around? I'm going to eat it. But if we have time to put some thought to it, then we're lighter during the day. And the midday, we might do a little heavier. And then the evening is more of a grill. We're on the grill. Grilled fish, you know, grilled veggies, and a lot of salads. Salads for lunch, salads for dinner. And if I can convince my dad to get the smoker going, then we're definitely smoking salmon, smoking something, trout. It doesn't matter. We're putting something on the grill.
Give us what you're going through right now in the countdown to opening up your restaurant.
The countdown is crazy. I'm kind of type A, believe it or not. And so my list used to be my best friend, and now they're turning into my worst enemy. It's like they haunt me. They haunt me in my sleep. They're all over my walls. They're on my cell phone. They're in my notebooks. They're everywhere. So it seems like now there's just not enough hours in the day. If I can get like 5 more hours a day, I feel like I could be a little bit more productive. So, you know, as an artist, for me, food is an art. And so it's almost, you go through the same thing as a painter or a sculptor goes through right before a big exhibition. And as many catering jobs as I do, you wouldn't think that I still wake up every day before the event with anxiety. Like, what if they don't like it? What if it's not good? You know, I play this game with myself in the mornings. If this happens, then what am I going to do? So that way.
And how do you talk yourself down?
Music. I got to get some music on. I have some, I call them my get right playlist to get my mind right.
Do you play music as you prepare food?
When I'm catering, I do. In the restaurant, we don't. When I went to culinary school, I'd worked in more European kitchens, so we worked silently. So I'm just used to, in the restaurant setting, to just be quiet. We're focused on what we're doing. We're not talking. We don't have the radio going. That way, we're cranking it out. But when we're catering, we've got a longer time horizon. It's more of a fun environment. We're having a good time.
We're talking spring recipes with Beth Bader, author of the Cleaner Plate Club, and Shanita McAfee, a caterer and executive chef at Magnolias, which is set to open soon here in Kansas City. Beth, you have an event coming up at the Bad Seed Farmers Market. Tell us about that.
Okay, it'll be Sunday, April 29th, and it's from 4 to 6 p.m. There'll be a lot of experts there on different ways to shop at the farmers market. There is a nutritionist and myself. I'll be talking about ways that you can give up the process of planning ahead and embrace what's there at the farmers market and then cook.
And how do you fix your mind to do that?
It was hard. It was a gradual process. And first, there was just the confusion that we all have of not even knowing what was in season, and then having to go back and start remembering again and relearning it every year and every season of doing it. And now it's getting a lot more automatic. It's a jumping off point, but it's definitely worth embracing. So I really enjoy it.
We have a note in from Carolyn. She said she likes to eat kohlrabi like an apple. How do our guests like to eat or cook kohlrabi?
I make a slaw with it because, again, it's got that spiciness mm-hmm. that you have with a turnip or a radish or horseradish. And it paired well with a sweeter slaw because you get that kind of sweet, spicy thing going. I haven't cooked it in a way that I like. I like it raw and fresh and crispy.
Yeah.
Shanita, you have an event coming up at Powell Gardens at the end of the month, coincidentally on the same day as Beth mm-hmm. here. But you're going literally just showing up.
Kind of. I'll call her, the lady who's organizing it here soon, and find out what kind of what they have in season, what they have going on. And maybe Saturday I'll think about it. Sunday I'll pack up all my stuff and go. When I do that, it seems to work better for the people watching because it kind of takes their anxiety away. They're like, what are you making? I don't know. Let's see what we have. Let's do it.
And you kind of just show up with spices and pans and just
work it out.
Just work it out. What are you expecting? Because Power Garden's obviously big on herbs, big on organic greens and spring veggies. What are you sort of vaguely expecting?
So I'm thinking, because obviously our time is going to be limited, we'll probably do some type of salad. And then depending on what they have going on, we'll figure out some type of protein and then kind of demonstrate using their herbs, marinating, and then I might even do a vinaigrette because that's always the question that people ask me. How do you make salad dressing? And springtime is a good time to start making vinaigrettes and start playing around with them because you have all these fresh herbs. You can come up with some really interesting vinaigrette combinations with all the fresh herbs.
So sometimes with spring, you can actually make condiments out of fresh ingredients.
Yes. Right.
The base recipe is the same for a vinaigrette, and then mm-hmm. the rest of it is just bringing different flavors, whether you want to do like preserves, like jams, make it a sweet one, or you can take it into the mustard range or fresh herbs. It's wide open, but the base formula is the same. It's one of the easiest things to make.
We've been talking spring recipes with our guest, Beth Bader. She's the author of the Cleaner Plate Club, and Shanita McAfee is a caterer and executive chef at Magnolias, which is set to open soon, next week, in fact.
Sunday the 22nd.
Sunday the 22nd. And you can find these recipes that we've been discussing here and more on our website at kcur.org. You can also go to kcur.org and post your own recipes so we can have an interactive culinary conversation and continue that and to complete that recipe spring exchange. Thank you for coming to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we return with a guest who takes clowning around very seriously. We'll be right back.